Ladies and gentlemen, I have no special quotes to read this evening. I have nothing profound to say, because the topic we'll be discussing is one we are all too familiar with: grief and loss. I know you might be surprised to hear a different voice coming at you first, but I'm the poet, Michael Mutu. And as usual, I have my brethren and brothers here, Stefan Campbell, lecturer, communication consultant, host extraordinaire. How are you?
Samba.
And of course, we have Baby Future himself, Karim Ellis, sales consultant, sales extraordinaire, entrepreneur. How are you doing, Karim?
Blessed, you know, bro. Blessed. Corona free, healthy and strong, you know?
You know, certainly, grief, especially for men, is a strange place to be. It's something that hit home quite recently with the death of, you know, a close friend. And I realized, you know, that though we wanted to have this discussion about men and processing these strong emotions, I didn't think we would have been having this conversation under these circumstances. And so we certainly want to dive into it. And I'd just like to pose to you, gentlemen, as I reflect on, you know, the death of Dean Michael Hill and other persons we've lost, you know, throughout the year. How have you handled grief in your lifetime? How do you process it?
Well, I think I process grief by not processing it. I handle grief by not handling it. It's perhaps not the healthiest thing, but that's the way I coped. I still have not gotten over deaths from as far back as 2011. You know, the first woman who ever got me, gave me the opportunity to teach, Miss Charmaine Henry, she passed, and I did not go to the funeral. My young bro, O'Shane, he passed. I did not go to the funeral. I think it's my way of still holding on. You know, a lot of people say going to the funeral, it's like closure. But like for all the people who I've lost over the years, you know, from suicide, car accidents, natural causes, I don't think I've gotten over any of these things. I might not be the best person to ask how do you how do you cope with grief?
To be honest with you, I handle grief like much men do, which is in isolation. You withdraw a bit and you try to suppress his feelings and push them to the back of your brain. You know, they're not in the forefront. Just like you, Stefan, I haven't gotten over the loss of loved ones. I try not to process it. I try not to talk about it. I try not to think about it. Because, you know, I mean, as men, we're supposed to be strong. You know, in quotes, we're supposed to be strong. You know, that's what society has told us for generations, you know. But yet, when these situations happen, we we don't know how to deal with it. You know, it's not something that a lot of us process very well. I myself, you know, as you talk about that, now I'm here thinking about, I mean, just having a little reflection of some real sad moments in the past. You know, I had friends that lost their lives throughout that whole lot of scamming uproar back in the days, you know, and I mean, they were cut down, you know, and I mean, these are close friends who I'd sit, you know, have dinner with at house and talk and all of that, and in a blink of an eye, they were gone. How you deal with that? You know, family members, my grandfather, he was butchered, literally butchered. That one, you know, like, it's funny because I don't know how, you know, as men, what are we supposed to do? Just come out and express that, you know, I'm grieving. And in grieving, what is it? I'm supposed to be left alone, or am I supposed to be in the company of others, or am I supposed to just give it time? But I found that, I mean, everyone grieves differently. So how I deal with it is kind of what Steph said, by not dealing with it. I just really just push it to the back of my head and really try and forget it until there's like a catalyst that triggers it off, and I'm like, shit, I have to go push that. Yeah, I have to go push this. I have to go push this back all the way back of my head now, you know. You cry. You'll have your moments where you cry. But then again, nobody sees these moments, you know. Wow, it's a difficult one.
So, Karim, you mentioned, you know, that we all grieve differently. But I'm wondering, you know, since grief tends to be such an external thing, you know, what do you imagine might be the dangers of internalizing something that is basically demanding to be let out of you? Because grief, I believe, you know, it's something that wants to be expressed. It's something that wants to be out there. But for men, given, you know, our nature of often suppressing things, how do you think, both you and Stefan, how do you think this suppression has affected you, you know, in other emotional departments as well?
Well, for me, in other emotional departments, I can say that I've become a bit hardened. You know, when you work out and you don't use gloves, you develop calluses. I think I have been calloused to certain stuff. So, like, I have that hard piece of skin over all of these issues. When we internalize these stuff and we don't really deal with them, a lot of men, if they're not strong or if they really don't know how to handle this, they can, you know, go in withdrawal, they can be overly angry, they can treat it by, you know, getting addicted to substances. It really can lead to a whole lot of things, because I think ultimately it's something that wants us, it wants to be expressed. But I think because we've been hardened, or we harden ourselves, ultimately it can lead to depression, right? If you don't know to handle it and you don't know to process it, or you handle it poorly, it can ultimately lead to depression, especially if you're grieving over someone that really had a significant impact on your life. It could be your father, it could be a friend, or those, you know, if it's that close to you, then trust me, it can really mess you up. I watched my mother grieve over her father, and I watched my mother lose weight. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, I think that was a lot that, I think after that funeral, my grandfather's funeral, I think that was the time I said, yo, I wouldn't go back to another funeral. And I had to attend two more after that. And it was, trust me. So, yeah, this thing, I don't know. I don't know.
Steph, do you feel, you know, a similar way? Do you feel like not expressing a grief? You know, what effect do you think it has on you as an individual?
Well, Karim actually spoke about the different stages of grief a while ago without even recognizing, because, you know, you have five to seven stages of grief. You know, we start with the initial shock, right? The initial shock and denial, the disbelief that this, like, something has happened. And then, you know, there's the anger. And then you wonder why this person and not somebody else, you know? And then you get to depression, right? But all of these stages, actually, the state of going through all of that is something they call bereavement. And I think as men, we kind of lengthen these individual stages. And by the way, the final stage is supposed to be acceptance. But I don't think we ever get to that point of acceptance, because, you know, we men are, you know, problem solvers. We are raised and we are trained to solve problems. It makes you feel helpless. It makes you feel helpless. Like, when this person has died, what am I to do? What can I possibly do? There is, and that is an open-ended question, because there is no solution, right? There is, and nothing makes you feel more helpless and reminds you of your own mortality than knowing that a loved one has died and there's not shit that you could do about it, you know? So it strikes your core, your very core. So, and then you start questioning, so what's the point of crying if after I cry, this person is not going to be back, right? What's the point of telling somebody that I am going through this if the only thing they can tell me is, sorry to hear that, and I understand how you feel, which are two things that I hate, because you do not understand what I feel. Even if you go through the similar thing, you cannot fully comprehend what me, as Stephan Campbell, has gone through. Unless to, and even if we lose the same person, we grieve differently, so you can never fully comprehend the weight on my shoulder, on my mind, right? Even on my body, of this thing. And that's something we never truly express, because then again, you have to worry about people looking at you differently. You have to worry about people not supporting you.
You know, I think, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, my own mortality and you know, just looking at the people around me and the people I value. And I know this might sound a bit, you know, morbid or a bit strange, but a thought, you know, crossed my mind. And it's something, I don't think I'll be leaning into it, but I feel like it's something that adds a different layer that perhaps other people might be dealing with. And the thought that crossed my mind is this: every single person that I care about, every single person I feel deeply about, they are vessels of immense pain for me. Because if you think about it, you are investing your emotional energy, you are investing yourself into the people you care about, and you are invested in their lives, in a very real way. So when you lose them, and that get ripped away from you, I start to think about it in a way that I think might not be healthy. It's almost a way that discourages forming, you know, deep bonds, you know? Because you look at it and you say, this person who I care very deeply about could one day become a source of pain for me that I may never recover from. And so I feel like sometimes people look at it. Sometimes these things deter people from you know, forming genuine connection with other people. Because they look at it that, yo, someday either I might be the source of your pain or you might be the source of mine. And so rather than subject myself to that, to such a heavy emotional burden, and it's not just emotional, it wears on you in every sense, rather than subject myself to that, I would rather not become intertwined in your life, so that when you leave, it's a lot easier for me to get on with mine.
No, I was saying that I get you, but I also want you to look at, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I was like, that's profound. But we also have to look at it from another angle, where we only don't grieve over the loss of someone. So it's not only the personal attachment that you have to another human being. You have instances where persons grieve over divorce, loss of health, losing their job, the loss of a pet, a miscarriage, retirement, a friendship, you know, loss of security in terms of financial security. So you have people who grieve over these different aspects. So if that's the case, then we shouldn't be attached to anything. So it puts us in a very sticky city, it puts us in a very sticky point, because let's even draw a reference to COVID. This whole social distancing that has been taking place has been causing also persons to grieve, because as human beings, we are sociable creatures. We're social creatures, right? We have to interact with people. Now, a lot of persons, their process of grieving or dealing with grief was that human interaction, the distraction. Now, when you take that away and you lock them up in isolation, and they're already isolated in their heads, you're creating a whole nother demon. You understand? So again, is it that we are weak?
I wouldn't necessarily go, you know, say that, because but I do see your point, and I completely agree. And that's what I was getting to. A lot of people, because of the, you know, when you lose something, and when you lose someone, the pain that comes with it, and I've seen it, the pain that comes with it is one that you could easily transition to a space where you feel like, yo, I don't need to become attached to anybody else, because I don't think I have it in me to suffer this kind of loss, you know, twice or however many times they do. So, you know, I feel like it's a hard thing to see, but the lesson beyond grief is perhaps a simple one, you know, that we cannot let the fear of losing something stop us from, you know, enjoying whatever that thing is, you know.
It's easy to feel apathetic when we lose someone, because I mean, with someone, something, because yes, we question what's the point of it all if it's all going to end, you know. That's why, you know, they say death is for the living, really, because after someone dies, it causes us to reflect, right? But I feel like not having any connections or not investing in anything makes you dead while you're very much alive, you know? And so there is the only things I think we need to stay in motion, and I think that's why we cope with grief by oftentimes overworking. Like that's what I do. When I'm working through these things, I keep doing it because I feel like if I pile things to do on top of this feeling, which is what Karim was talking about, the back of your mind, then ultimately it's going to disappear. It doesn't necessarily disappear because December 3, 2014, I was the last person to speak to my grandmother on the phone. Me being in Jamaica, she being in a hospital bed in Trinidad. And when I came off of that phone, I cried to the point of almost crying blood. And I was in the office at the time. And after I cried, and there was another lecturer in the office, and there was nothing he could do. I couldn't even bring myself to even say it. And after that, I just stayed in the office and kept working because that was my way of dealing with it. And it kind of causes some trauma because now any time I get a phone call and the person starts with, remember this person, or if my mother calls twice, I get anxiety because I'm like, please, there's a possibility that it could be bad news. And there is nothing I can do because I'm way over here and she's way over there. Right? That could be with anything, you know, because yes, like even during this COVID thing, somebody call or message and from the start a certain way I said, Jesus Christ.
But you know, Steph, to your experience with your grandmother, I don't think I've ever shared this. But you know, when my grandfather died, I remember passing. I was going on campus that day, so I used to attend the University of the West Indies, Western Jamaica campus. And I remember coming down in a taxi and I saw the commotion on the road. I saw some relatives of mine crying and I heard somebody say, Papa. And I knew what was happening. And in that instant, I decided not to stop the car. Because for me, I didn't really want to acknowledge, you know, what happened. I'm not sure what I wanted in that moment. But I knew I came, I passed, you know, the whole commotion. And then I reached this other section of the community and I saw another relative of mine on the road crying. And I held my head straight. And I went straight on campus and I headed straight for the basketball court. I didn't even plan to play ball that day. And I remember it was about after 6, 6:30, 7. And I was there shooting and shooting and shooting until my phone started ringing. And it was my sister. And I answered and she said, she asked if I was sitting down. So I said, yo, like, what problem? And she said, yo, it's Papa. He's dead. And my response was, I know. And I said, yo, I'll talk to you later. And I, you know, that was a heavy thing because, you know, I didn't want to accept the call because I knew what it would have meant. But I felt like internally, you know, I had already gotten the information and had already suppressed it. There was no crying, there was nothing, there was just the simple words, "I know, talk to you later," and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Do y'all ever feel guilty for still being here when like someone young has died? Do you feel guilty for having something when someone else has lost it? Do y'all feel guilty?
Honestly, no. It might sound a way, but I don't allow myself to think on it that long to a point where I'm going to feel guilty. So I try not to focus on these things where I'm going to be thinking on them to a point where I feel guilty. If for a second I have that thought, I stop and I practice gratitude and I get on from there. I try not to focus on it. Period.
I don't. You know, I remember you telling me, Steph, you know, that we honor the dead by living. And so I think I've, even if I've never thought about that specific statement in time before, I always operated from that base of, you know, of carrying the pain, but also, you know, carrying the memories of that person. And I... If anything, if I feel guilty about anything, it's this, and it's always a weird thing to me. And I think about it sometimes. You know, I think about someone dying, and you know, if a year has passed, there a certain guilt kind of comes over me when if I, you know, start a run up into something that reminds me of the person, and there's a guilt that comes up. Yo, you haven't said this person's name in a year, and neither has other people, and you're looking at it, and there's a feeling of gloom, because you know it's almost like you are no longer you never existed, you know. Because how soon do people stop talking about the dead? You know, you grieve for a couple of days and then, you know, you move on and you continue living your life without realizing that somebody who used to be such an active part of who you are, even if you do remember them occasionally, there is this nagging feeling that something is missing, but it's also something you haven't stopped to acknowledge. And it's a bit unfair to put that pressure on yourself, you know, to think that you have to continuously bring, you know, the everybody who has died along with you. But it's just something I've always taken note of, that we stop talking about, you know, people who once were here without really realizing it. And just like that, you know, I wonder about, you know, my place, and I think about legacy, and I think about all of that, because, you know, if I can look at it and say, oh, you stopped talking about this person maybe about a month after they died, like, what does that say of, you know, the kind of life they live, even if it's not necessarily a reflection of it? But what does it say when you can so easily forget and in a sense involuntarily abandon the memories, you know what I mean?
Yeah. For me, you know, I think about, well, one, I do feel guilty sometimes, because oftentimes I feel like, you know, I've lived a life and I've done some foolish things, oftentimes some dangerous things, and I'm still here, you know? And here is somebody who lived a good life, didn't do half the things I did, never got a chance to, and they died. That's one part of the guilt. And then the other part is wondering if you could have done more while they were alive, if you could have reached out more, if you could have had more conversations. You know, oftentimes, like, we get so caught up in life that we like, we disregard the connections and not realize that it's so fickle. So, you know, it's and then you start wondering, when was the last time I saw this person? And what was the last conversation? Like, just like right when this COVID thing started, like a week before this COVID thing started, I remember seeing a guy that I went to UWE with in Mother's Patties in Ireland, and had a little conversation, and then he went back to doing what he was doing, and I went back to doing what he was doing. And 2 days after, it's a Twitter post that this guy died by suicide. 2 days after. And it's this, and I saw it and I ignored it. And then I got the text, "Yo, you remember this person?" And I said, "Jesus Christ." You know, and so you start wondering, you know, if you could have done some more, if you could have said some more. And I think, like, going back to what Karim said, yes, you can lose your job, you know, you can lose a relation, and we haven't even touched relationships. But the difference is, I think death is finite. They say you forget the sound of the person's voice first, then the face, and then the smell. Right, and then that person is nothing more than a bland memory sometimes. But like in the other, like even, but in like the loss of a relationship now, I think it hits with the same level, the same heaviness if it's a meaningful relationship. But the difference is, it's like, You start walking around with that demon, because what you try to do is try to recreate that relationship. You can't recreate a person when a person dies, but when you lose a serious relationship, you try recreating that, or you try looking for the same things in other people. I don't know if you all ever went through that.
Demon. Absolutely. I think it, like, and that in itself is a form of grieving, because you are still holding on to remnants of something you once valued, you know, and something you want to keep alive. And I think that's the difference between the death of a person and the death of a relationship. Like, one, you easily accept, quite logically, that nothing you do will ever bring this person back. But a relationship, as long as you are alive, there's a possibility. And if you can't have it with the person you have it with, you can certainly try your hand at recreating the exact condition with somebody else. And that, you know, it ironically, it sometimes leads to the death of, you know, prospective relationships even before they had a chance to really live. Because you are now at a point where you are imposing, you know, you are no longer seeing. You are seeing someone in the sense that we describe seeing someone, but you are not seeing them. You are seeing a skeleton to be outfitted with the best thing you took from your past relationship.
Ghost of Christmas so past. You, indeed, it's the ghost of somebody before, yeah.
Right. So you completely erase that person's individuality in a sense. This might be a bit of a stretch, but in a sense, you erase that person's individuality. You kill that person's individuality because you want to breathe life into something that was dead in your past. You know, and so when you find that dynamic going on, it's really a heavy thing to lose a relationship and not be equipped to transition from it, to transition from the reality that you could have this again, but with somebody else. So we start to lose objectivity and we start to think that, you know, instead of trying to accept, you know, whatever new thing life is pushing in my way, I'm going to impose what I want. I wanted this person. So if I get somebody, I'm either going to try to make you that person, or I'm going to try to make this relationship what I had. And that's always counterproductive.
So, what do we do now?
How do we handle it?
And again, that's, I think I said it earlier, everyone handles grief differently. I don't know if there's a black or white way to really handle it. I think based on the person's personality and their temperament, I think it has to be tailor-fitted for that person in a sense. What would work for Stefan probably wouldn't work for me. What would work for Natu, or what would work for me probably wouldn't work for Natu. We all grieve differently. I remember my dog, I love this dog. Recently it happened, a Belgian Shepherd. I got that dog on my birthday, January the 1st, about 6 or 7 years ago. So that dog was special to me, very special to me. Unfortunately, someone poisoned my dog. And the worst part about it is I have an idea of who did it, right? Now, this is difficult because in handling my grief, I wanted retaliation. So there was also anger within my pain that was triggering off retaliation to a point where I literally jumped in my vehicle and I literally was on a mission to find the perpetrator, if you understand. I had to literally find some way there to distract myself and be like, yo, what are you doing? I, you know, took the dog up, you know, put him up, and, you know, and that was a dog. You understand? I mean, some people have significant attachment to animals, right? I did not know. I'm gonna be completely honest with you. Up until Suede that died, the name of my dog Suede, and up until Suede died, and I felt that I didn't know a dog could make me feel that way. You understand? And I had to really stop, and you know, even talking about it now, I'm still seeing the image of him and I'm like, wow, you know. So dealing with grief, how I dealt with that, I mean, I'm still dealing with it. You know, it was pretty recent. I just really just take my mind off it and try to distract myself with more positive thoughts, because the moment you dwell on that and you focus on that, you're putting yourself in kind of a negative space, right? And if you stay within that negative space, you're only going to breed and harbor more negative feelings and emotions. Because I'm telling you that had I stayed in that space, I know what I would have done, because I'm persistent and determined that way, that I would find that person and we probably wouldn't be having this podcast right now with me on it. You understand? And then it would be all because of, somebody would look at it and say it would be all because of a dog. You understand? But that person would not know what that dog meant to me.
John Wick.
Perfect example. We're going John Wick mode right now. So yeah, dealing with grief, I think, and for me, I'm going to be completely honest with you, my mental strength, I am a lot stronger mentally now than I was 6-7 years ago. And that's because of the high level of personal growth that I have taken on. Now, for someone who isn't personally developed to a point where he can get in his mind and change his unconscious thinking, you're dealing with a whole different animal. You're dealing with someone that can act based on how they feel. So then that's why I said I don't feel like grief is a black and white situation. You kind of have to meet the person where they are. And I don't know how many arenas there are for people to, you know, like, especially men, to go and grief or find somebody and be like, listen, this is what is happening to me. Because it ain't easy. You know, a lot of men, we don't like vulnerability. And that's a sign of vulnerability.
Absolutely. That's the paradox. That's the paradox.
And then, you know, to that point, Perim, I know we might not find a method, you know, being that everybody grieves differently, I know we might not find, you know, one way for a person to handle it. But I think ultimately we cannot agree that persons, and more specifically in this case, men should allow themselves to feel, you know, the pain, you know, to feel the grief. You know, if I'll share a quote from, two quotes. I remember one from the Fortunate Star, where it says, that pain demands to be felt. And so, you know, we shouldn't resist that. So when we are confronted with grief, we should. And I remember a couple of years ago coming across this quote by this guy named Leo Buscaglia. And basically, you know, it was just talking about, you know, a person who experienced grief and who might feel like, you know, they shouldn't, you know, risk becoming attached to somebody. I remember the quote, and I remember memorizing it, and the quote is, a person who risks nothing, has nothing, does nothing, and is nothing, and that person becomes nothing. You may avoid suffering and sorrow, but you simply cannot learn, feel, change, grow, or love. Chained by his certitude, he's a slave, and he has forfeited his freedom. Only the person who risks is truly free. And so we should, you know, be guided by that. And men feel all the feelings to feel. You know, that's the only way we can.
It says, you know, it's better to have loved than lost than never have loved at all. And so I like that you're saying that we need to accept the pain and the fact that, to be honest, some of the things I mentioned, I've never mentioned, even to myself, to be honest. And I think that's one of the myths that we need to, that's another myth that we need to get over, like, not talking about this thing doesn't make it go away, right? You know, we also feel like it should have a timeline, like this thing should only last a year. Like, why am I still 4 years later, still going through this thing? Like, that's a myth, right? And we feel like moving on means forgetting. Like, there are so many things that we need to dispel, like, in the back of your mind. Like, this thing, unless you have amnesia, you have lost someone, and accepting that doesn't mean forgetting that person, right? Crying doesn't mean that you're weak, right? That's a myth. Not crying doesn't mean that you don't care, because that's another thing. Because, you know, there have been people I've lost, and people sort of use my reaction to judge. You know, like because you don't break down and bawl and tear your clothes and put ashes on your head, that you are not feeling. You're not feeling it, like your outward expression doesn't match the internal feeling, especially for men. So, yes, Karim, I think we all go through it differently, but like for men, starting with us, I think going through differently is one thing, but we have to go through it for our own mental health, emotional health. I think balance, mental, spiritual, and emotional and physical balance is something that we need to all achieve, because all of them affect each other, and it brings us, or it creates that optimal self, you know? So I don't think it's something we need to, we should run from at all.
And on that note, Ferz, I think we should be here and have the conversation continued among our supporters. You know, we very much want to hear from you guys. How have you handled grief? How do you navigate it? You know, what are your coping mechanisms? You know, they may be able to help other people. But bros, this was a different one, but it's always a bit uncomfortable confronting, you know, our mortality and the effects of it. But kudos, you know, to each of you for sharing. Anything you'd like to say before we close up?
Well, I definitely want to say, you know, in confronting our demons, rest in peace to all the angels.
Indeed. All right. We'll see you next time.